Will you reach out to me if I reach out to you? We have a theme this month in church. That theme is radical hospitality. Radical hospitality. Break it down. Radical from the root of the thing to the root. Don't think of radical here as loud, aggressive, extremist. Think of radical as deep, transformative, essential. Radical from the root to the root of it. Hospitality. The hos part means stranger, guest. The patality part comes from the same root as potent, as power. The host is one with power over strangers. That's what it means. Hospitality is the power to welcome strangers and guests or to turn them away. And here is the argument for radical hospitality. We are each hosts. We each have the power to welcome strangers or to turn them away. And the question, will we welcome another into our life or not? This question is at the root, is radical to what it means to be a human being. I ran across a quotation this week from the theologian Paul Tillich. He said that language has created the word loneliness to express the pain of being alone. And it has created the word solitude to express the glory of being alone. I think every one of us knows this truth. There are times when solitude is blessed peace, especially if you are an introvert. Introverts are not necessarily shy, but they definitely need time alone to recharge and get energy. Did you know that although only 25% of the U.S. population at large is introverted, about 75% of Unitarian Universalists are? It's true. Tells you a lot about why we're like we are. We need our alone time to think and read and ponder. Truthfully, what we need depends on what our life is like. If you have small children who are climbing on you and talking and asking questions all the time, 10 minutes of peace and quiet can be as precious as gold. If you are living by yourself, not working or working a job without much interaction with others, you might feel starved for human contact, for someone to talk to, for someone to notice you. Sometimes we think we don't need or want others at all. We just want to be alone in our grumpiness. Don't bother me, I'm grumpy. But others are exactly what we need. Others to walk with us, to stand with us, even on one leg, to fly with us, and finally, to be in communion with us, to eat together, to speak together, to welcome one another into our homes and into our hearts. For the last few years, there's been a lot of talk about how loneliness is the spiritual malady of our time. People have written about the sense of isolation in modern life, that despite all our supposed connectivity, we are, as the famous book on this topic describes it, bowling alone. Studies indicate that people don't feel like they have someone to share important things with, someone they can really be honest with. These same studies indicate that this is a new trend, or that things seem to be getting worse. Folks have speculated and studied about why this might be. Some say, oh, it's because we move so much and we don't develop strong roots. But in truth, the rate of mobility hasn't changed that much over the last 100 years. Others say, oh, it's because we work so much more and we don't have time for connections, and that might be part of it. Others say it's the television. Instead of interacting with others, we sit in front of the tube and we watch make-believe, and then when we gather the next day in the break room, what do we talk about? Whatever we saw on television the night before. I'm sure that's a contributing factor. And folks have identified lots of other causes, and I'm sure you can think of some yourself. Optimists believe that social networking will reverse this trend and facilitate stronger connections. Pessimists believe that we'll keep retreating into our personal devices, heads down and apart from one another in real life. I guess I'm a bit of an optimist about this. In my own life, social networking has helped me be more connected to other people than I otherwise would. And also, something's got to give. We cannot keep becoming more and more isolated without serious damage to our civic life, our emotional and physical health, and our spirit. I'm a firm believer in Stein's law. If something cannot continue forever, it will stop. It just has to. Social changes, demographic changes, technology, culture, these trends and effects will sometimes make us less lonely and sometimes more lonely. At different times in our lives, we will have different levels of connection to others and need different levels of connection. But these individual and social trends are really only an overlay, amplification or mitigation for the more existential human reality that each of us stands awkwardly and precariously between the fact that we are to ourselves alone, that only we know our inner lives on one hand, and on the other, that we are always already with others, that we need others to validate and to grow and to challenge and to love. Though we only know our inner lives, we do not understand ourselves. At least we cannot understand ourselves fully without others. In conversation with others, in communion with others, we discover both our commonality and our individuality, for we are alike and we are different. Without a mirror, I cannot see my own face, and I depend on others to see me, and others depend on me. Despite the occasional glory of solitude, necessary and important as it is to rest and renew, we cannot be ourselves, cannot fulfill our purpose, indeed, cannot even exist as a living person without communion with others. And though some of our connections with others will always necessarily be transactional and shallow, for we cannot have a deep connection with every person we meet, each of us wants, at a core level, to connect in a genuine and authentic way with at least one other person. We want others to see us as we experience ourselves, as full, complex, real people, people who love and hope and fear and wonder. Our existential need for connection is related to our existential dread of death, or rather non-existence. Since we are aware that we once did not exist, we fear non-existing. It's not a conscious, all the time present fear, but something deep at the level of our being. So while solitude can be refreshing, loneliness is a kind of death. When no one sees us, connects with us, we begin to wonder if we ourselves are even real, if we exist at all. So in the face of this need to connect, we enter into community. We find ways to be with others. This is family, of course, and it is friendship, and it is religious community. Religious community doesn't have to be built on radical hospitality, and often, in fact, it isn't. The folks who gather in a place are pretty much all like each other, and nobody new is really ever welcome. Or people come for the performance, or for the show, or because it is ritual and expected, or for whatever reason. Excuse me. But they don't really know the people with them, and they don't open their heart to each other. I've been to churches like that. I once visited a church where folks were just plain rude, where the newcomer was eyed with suspicion, literally sort of eyed, like, who are you? What are you doing here? Nobody said hi. There was no hospitality at all, let alone a sense of responsibility for the stranger that got to the root of our need to connect with others. I've also been to a church where everyone smiled, and folks said hi, and were all polite, and there were greeter stations, and everything was very professional and very anonymous. They were hospitable, but not in a radical way, not at the root. Both these churches were in different ways very much part of our lonely culture. The rude church just stopped trying. They came in the door, found what they were looking for, and shut the door after themselves. The friendly but shallow church was using all the techniques, but they were still holding back, keeping everything light and easy. Don't ask folks to transform themselves. Don't ask anyone to do anything hard or different. Radical hospitality, on the other hand, is deeply countercultural. It doesn't play by the rules. You know the rules. Don't talk to strangers. Don't be vulnerable. Don't rock the boat. Radical hospitality welcomes the stranger. It opens our heart. It throws out the rules so that the new person is taken as they are. You have come to my house. Then come in and be welcome. Your presence may disturb my routine or upset my carefully ordered plans, but since I am a host, someone with responsibility over strangers, then I will make you welcome. It's what I will do. I want to be really clear about this, what radical hospitality is and what it isn't. Obviously, radical hospitality is not rudeness. It's not turning your back or ignoring the stranger or closing the door, nor is it the fake use of technique, the greeter who smiles because it is their job and clearly for no other reason. Radical hospitality, we must also say, isn't about saying those well-known words, make yourself at home. You treat guests as guests, as folks who don't know their way around yet, who need a guide and a friend. We have friends who were great hosts to us. We'd go over to their house and they'd welcome us and take our coats, give us something to eat, something to drink, for about the first 10 times or so. And then it was, please, help yourself. Mikasa, sukasa. Because we were friends then, and not strangers anymore. That is appropriate and welcoming for the 11th visit, but not for the first or the second. Radical hospitality also is not the super aggressive approach. It's not going up to the new person and giving them an unsolicited hug, or asking them what committee they want to be on. Asking them 20 questions or getting into their space. That's not radical hospitality. That's desperation. It's not attractive. Homan and Pratt write about this in their book on radical hospitality, that when the guest comes, you welcome them with genuine spirit. And you take care of their immediate physical needs, and then you step back. But because the welcome was true and real, they know that they can return to you and that you're there for them. Radical hospitality erases loneliness, but not solitude. When I've experienced this kind of radical hospitality, this is how it often works. I arrive at a conference center and someone greets me and gives me the packet and a name tag and a map to my room, says, we'll be here when you're unpacked and ready. Solitude is a glory when community and connection are available, when it is a choice instead of the only option. Look, this isn't about technique. It's about the genuine heart. It's about what kind of person you want to be, how you see yourself. Victoria Safford's congregant, John, he wasn't welcoming because he wanted a bigger church or because he needed friends. It was because he saw himself as one with responsibility for strangers, as a host. And a host shows hospitality, real, genuine, honest, everyday practice. If everyone here practiced radical hospitality, if everyone opened their heart to the strangers, welcomed, not crowd them, but welcomed them, yes, it would help the church thrive. But I don't want you to do it because it will help the church. If you are lonely in your life and you start every day trying to practice radical hospitality, you will over time make more friends and be less lonely. But I don't want you to do it to make more friends. If you seek justice and you want the marginalized to be respected and you want the unseen to be seen, then practicing radical hospitality will help make real that world. But I don't want you to do it for the sake of justice. No, if you practice radical hospitality, if you work at it and stretch yourself, I hope you will do it because being a good host, connecting at a deep level, welcoming the stranger into your life is the fullest and best expression of being human. Do it because you are called by the spirit of life and love which lives in you and in the person you're getting to know. Because you love human beings, friends and strangers both. Because you hold true the great universalist teaching that we are all brothers and sisters to each other. Do it because it is good to be with one another. Welcome another into your heart because it is the way that you will be welcomed into the heart of another. Do it because you have faith in the radical truth, the root of things, that beneath it all, beneath all our differences and apparent commonalities, beneath our fears and our hopes, we are all seeking communion, to look into one another's faces and see there the reflection of our own eyes. Do it because it makes your heart sing with joy. Whoever else we are, whatever else we seek, at the root, we are all sojourners. We all seek to be known and to know one another. We all have responsibility for strangers. We are all hosts. We are all capable of and in need of radical hospitality. In such spirit, in such hope, and such power, let us sing. It's in your gray hymnal, number 318, We Would Be